It's classic Butterfly Kisses from Bob Carlyle. At 11 minutes after the hour, it's a Tuesday morning, and guess who's joined us, David? Any idea? Can you guess
who's joined us? Let's see. What is it? Today is...
Tuesday.
It is Tuesday? Tuesday,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we used to talk to a guy by the name of Dr. Don down in Texas.
Don something.
We haven't seen him since last year.
No, he had a degree in everything, didn't he? Wasn't he like a... Mm-hmm. Like, he was like a scientist of some kind, wasn't he?
Well, like a handful of degrees.
Yeah.
Do we have him on?
Well, just so happens we have a gentleman named Don Clark. Don, are you degreed? Are you pedigreed?
Yes, I come from purebred lineage here.
Papers and everything.
I've got papers.
Dr. Don Clark, a biochemist and member of the board of Creation Moments, joined us again after we missed you for about 3 weeks, I think. One of it was my fault because we were on kind of a Christmas holiday.
And a couple of my fault.
Yeah.
It's a big Christmas going here, there, and everywhere.
Welcome back. It's good to hear your voice again here.
Well, thank you. Good to be back.
How was Christmas?
Oh, Christmas was very nice. We had most of our kids with us at Christmas and their spouses, so we had quite a crowd around the dinner table.
Okay.
And everything was quite enjoyable. Okay. Yes, indeed.
And did some of that good Garden Valley weather going on?
Yes, it was a little chilly, but not super cold. It was probably in the 50s back then, as I recall.
Just curious, because we took off to Southern California for about 5 days, and we ran into 40 degrees and rain for much of that time. But as we were leaving, winging our way out over the ocean, about to turn and head back toward East Dakota, it was 65 degrees and sunny. So I guess we did our job, and it turned nice as soon as we left. No. Wherever East Dakotans go, they bring the weather with them. Yeah, so, okay. Yeah,
been warm and humid, and so our weather is going up and down right now.
Well, that jet stream is dipping down across North Texas. It's normally right over our heads, but it's bringing cold Arctic air to much of the country. So hopefully your grapes won't freeze. You got them all bundled up down there?
Oh, we do. Actually, once they drop their leaves, they're pretty much dormant and stay dormant until it starts warming up. But the problem comes in when the weather starts climbing up. We had 70, 75 degree weather yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And the day before. So if it stays up too long, then they start waking up and
they say, aha, it's spring. It's time to blossom. Yeah. Yeah. Don, from time to time we've talked about cavemen. And I think this article reminds me too. This article from the Institute for Creation Research. There's a link in the chat window, by the way. If you want to we had some other links, but if you want to scroll up a few, it's at about 7:33. I put a link in the chat window so people can kind of follow along with us. That phrase, so easy a caveman could do it. Now, it was kind of cute, although it rubbed me the wrong way from the beginning. Yeah, that was a Geico ad, as I believe, and they had a rather pleasant but very rough-looking character that was posing as a caveman. The image of cavemen, where does that come from?
I mean, that's when you think of a caveman, of course you think of an individual that's, you know, looks like he's part ape and part human.
Yeah.
Got some characteristics of both, and that's the image that's been portrayed to us for at least 100 years or longer since the discovery of Neanderthals. Mm-hmm. Back in Darwin's time, now Darwin didn't really comment much on the Neanderthals, but Julian Huxley did. He did some studies and measured the skulls and capacity and everything, and he came to the conclusion that the skulls were about the same size as a primitive tribesman.
Mm-hmm.
And so the evolutionists have been, of course, looking for this the human links to apes, and so they took the skulls and everything and imagined in their minds, for example, that they were quite furry. And of course, nobody knows. Mm-hmm. Because when you have a skull, you don't have the skin with the hair. So you don't know how hairy that individual was, much less his behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, can you imagine, finding your bones, for example, and somebody saying, aha, yes, this individual was definitely a radio broadcaster. Because of his ears, or his head is pushed in a little bit from wearing the
brain is very small and his mouth is very large. It had to be, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's kind of the same type of thing that you're getting, with these images. It's a device that evolutionists have used. That is, if we can think about it, if we think up an image for a particular humanoid, for example, then that has to be true.
This is making much of little, it seems to me. And the article credits Charles Darwin for injecting the look, imagine, see methodology to explaining the diversity of life on Earth, which means he was more artist than scientist, it seems to me.
Well, yes, that's the case, and of course we have pictures, or at least drawings, he drew while he was in the Galapagos for about a month. He drew, obviously, many, many different types of finches, and from the finches he then concluded, aha, you see, this finch evolved into this other finch, which is totally wrong, but... it caught on.
It would have been a shame to sail all the way to the Galapagos Islands and come up with nothing of significance. So and I think the same principle applies to scientists now that are working with research grants and with high expectations of corporations to solve this problem or solve that problem, to actually come up with something significant when there is nothing nearly that significant in front of them. That's the imagination part, isn't it?
Well, it is the imagination, but Darwin's original charter was to be the naturalist on the ship that was sailing down to the Galapagos, and so he was really just to record what he saw, and he did a fine job of that. I mean, he drew different animals. He drew the tortoises and many, many different types of animals that you find in an isolated island like that, but you don't find, various parts of the world. So he documented, from a naturalistic point of view, that. But he went one step further and then took some ideas from Charles Lyell of long ages, and then surmise that, this must be evolution, mm-hmm. and this must be evidence of evolution. And of course, he wrote a book about it and then became famous, and people picked it up because they liked the idea. They liked the idea that evolution, that, we evolved, and we evolved, it's natural. If you're thinking about a naturalistic process of how we got here, then it would be almost obvious that we had to evolve from apes, because apes look like us. I mean, mm-hmm. yes, they're quite furry, and yes, they have long, longer arms than us, but we could imagine that, yes, after maybe, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, we would evolve into us from the apes. Well, this is the imagination that came when for example, the Neanderthal bones were found in a cave in the Neanderthal Valley in Germany. And that's how the Neanderthals actually got their name, was from the valley that the bones were found in. Mm-hmm. But they found these bones and they said, these are definitely ancient bones, and these are definitely, some evidence for an ape man type of thing. And you see, we're finding the ancient link, and we've got this the link now from the monkeys to man. Mm-hmm. But it was purely imagination that led them to draw these images and to suggest that these indeed were humanoid and not necessarily or ape. They had this ape quality, They drew them, you know, with their backs kind of slumped over like an ape would walk, and you know, furry and obviously not upright and erect. But we're finding now that all of that is wrong. Mm-hmm. Every bit of that is absolutely wrong.
Now, these bones were found in 1856, according to the article here, and that was just before Darwin published his work, the On the Origin of Species. Was the evolutionary theory in play then, before Darwin?
Yes, Charles Lyell had actually came up with a theory. He's not often credited with that.
Now, he was an attorney, wasn't he?
No, I think he was a geologist or a...
Okay, there are a couple of people back there. Okay.
He came up with the concept of what we see from the geology has mm-hmm. to be a result of constant processes, and therefore must be very, very old.
And eons of time. Came up with the notion, I guess, of geological time, then.
Time. And then, Darwin tacked on, well, you know, if we've got a lot of time, then we've got enough time, hopefully, to evolve from various types of species and individuals.
Because evolution requires long periods of time.
It requires long periods of time. It requires death. And mm-hmm. so, hence, you got to, you know, one species has to die and pass on new traits to another species so that the in quote, new species or new kind, if you will, can take prominence over the old kind, because mm-hmm. the new kind is better than the old kind mm-hmm. in some fashion. At least that's a very gross estimate, you know, a statement about evolution. But obviously, what we see today is not that at all. I mean, what we see in the fossil record is not a slow and gradual process from one creature to another creature, but it's we see fully developed plants and animals and humans. They're fully developed. There's no intermediate kinds, no intermediate species, and we can stretch our imagination to say, oh, well, we found a fish that looks like it's got little feet, and we found that up a mountain, so obviously the fish is evolving into a lizard or something that mm-hmm. Walks on land, instead of imagining that, hey, you know, this fish actually lives today, and it lives in caves in the Mediterranean, and you can still find them, but they're pretty shy, and they're, you don't come across them very often, and they look exactly like the fish that's found up in the mountain, and it's not climbing off onto the shoreline. We don't see them on the shore. We see them in the mm-hmm. caves. So instead of saying that, oh, the reason why they're up in the mountain is because that mountain was uplifted during a very catastrophic period in our Earth history, which, of course, we know as the flood and the post-flood, period. Mm-hmm. So if you have your basic Earth history wrong, as Charles Lyell started off on the wrong foot, if you will, then your conclusions about life and about how we got here can be completely off. And that is indeed the case for the Neanderthals that we're discussing here today. For example, they now know that Neanderthals obviously had sex and had progeny with other humans, which means that they were fully human, because you couldn't have that if the DNA was very far apart from human DNA. So they had to be human in order for that to take place. They know now that, for example, a child or a baby's brain development isn't like an ape. It's exactly like a human. So it's you know, everything that we're finding out now about the Neanderthals is completely 180 degrees out of phase with the original images that were portrayed to us by the imaginary evolutionist. Mm-hmm. So it's not this type of, you know, this type of thing happens over and over and over again in evolutionary discoveries. Someone makes a you know, discovery of a bone or a tooth or a skull cap that was found and claims that it's a transitional form, when indeed it's either ape or it's a pig or it's fully human. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing you know, nothing in between when you actually go and investigate it and really do the real scientific work of and the honest work, really, because you want to come in with no perceived you know, kind of notion as to what this is, and kind of figure out, okay, you know, what do we have here. And when you do that, you always come to the conclusion that there are no transitional forms. It's either a fully ape or it's a fully human individual. Or in the case of of the tooth, it was a pig, you know, but it's not anything. No transitional forms, you know, have been found.
But still, in our minds, when we hear the word caveman, I think all of us instantly picture kind of a brutish looking guy. And
well, and if you go to natural history museums, you will see the progression from ape to man. Mm-hmm. And we have been indoctrinated, and you know, this is happening this is happening today with our movies. I mean, it used to happen with drawings. Mm-hmm. All right. But now, with the graphics art that we have, capabilities with the computers, we can bring these things to life. We can make movies about, you know, the Neanderthals and picture them as cave people. And we can imagine how they might have had little communities and have them kind of crouched down looking like apes. But that's all it is. It's an imagination. And those images, you know, stick with us. It's the truth. It's interesting because it's the same thing that happened with the Scopes trials. You know, we have the image that the Scope trials came out on favor of the monkeys, on favor of the evolutionists. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't true at mm-hmm. all. It came out you know, it came out.
The school teacher was convicted. Was
convicted. Mm-hmm. But that's not the image that you have today because of a movie mm-hmm. that was, you know, portrayed incorrectly on purpose. And we have these things, you know, today. And as I said, you know, we're getting more and more of these incorrect images being implanted, not only, you know, to us as adults, but to our kids. And so they're growing up not investigating the facts. And this article, and I like, you know, the Institute of Creation Research quite a bit. Obviously, we talk a lot about mm-hmm. the articles that they have because they actually do the research and they put together the scientific evidence, you know, for creation as opposed to evolution, and they are very good at pointing out, as well as, you know, Creation Moments, we have information on our website as well, but pointing out the inconsistencies in the evolutionary story.
Well, apparently they've done a simple search here. They talk about a simple search for published reports returns headlines like, "Surprise, Neanderthals were fine housekeepers. Ancient engraving strengthens case for sophisticated Neanderthals. Ice Age fashion showdown, Neanderthal capes versus human hoodies. The real question, who didn't have sex with the Neanderthals? Neanderthals may have used chemistry to start fires," and so it goes. These are all articles that say we've been wrong all along in our analysis of who these people were. Now, there's a picture toward the end of the article that the National Geographic Society apparently commissioned. It's a picture of a Neanderthal woman named Wilma. I'm afraid they made up a name for it. I don't know why they did that. I guess it's handy. but they still picture her with wild hair and dirt all over her face. And they still want to give us that brutish look, don't they?
They do. They just will refuse to say that, hey, you know, if these people were neat, if they kept their houses neat, if they're, you know, if they swept out their caves, perhaps they weren't quite so dirty. I mean, you know, if you find some washing bowls,
yeah,
perhaps these people cleaned up, which would have been the case, you know, because looking at it from a biblical perspective, where did these people come from? Well, they're ancients from Noah's Ark and from the Tower of Babel. They are migrants after the language was confused at the Tower of Babel, at Babel, and people then began to disperse around the earth as God had commanded. Then some groups of people migrated north and ended up in the Germanic, you know, country, as well as you know, France and Spain and all that other, mostly descendants of Japheth, we now know, you know, went in that kind of direction. And so even the descriptions of some of the bones that they found, the skulls of the furrowed brows and everything, that is just a result of old age. So that should tell us that these people were quite old. I mean, probably, you know, most of them were dying off older than we die off now. So we die off much younger than these folks. And as you recall, I mean, Noah himself lived, you know, 900 plus years. And then his descendants, you know, his children, 500 and so, then the age started to drop off, you know, after that. And when you finally get to Moses, it's, you're doing good living 120 years.
Well, that's what God had said. It tells us that in Genesis, that the lifespan of man would be 120 years. And I guess when the Neanderthals emerged out of the Middle East, the lifespan was in the process of reducing.
Yes, because of the environment was not as conducive for life as it was before the flood. And so, you know, we had these folks migrating, but the patriarchs, the older ones that migrated, let's say, first, would have been old. I mean, old in age, and older than 120 years is what I'm trying to say. So, of course, they're going to have features that as your bones, you know, continue to grow, you begin to get these features that anthropologists, for example, connote to ape-like features, when indeed they're not ape-like features at all. They're just the, you know, the oldness of the individual when they died. So if we looked at it from that perspective and then try to figure out, well, how old were these people? You know, how old is this skull that we found? We might get a completely different picture, and I would suppose that we would get a completely different picture of who this whole society was. And you know, we would have a different picture, and not only that, it would reinforce the biblical accuracy. Not that it's just a bunch of stories, but it actually is a recorded history. And if we look at it from that perspective, and then look at the evidence that we have, which is, you know, these Neanderthal skulls and bones, for example, we could piece these things together and say, aha, you see, this is, you know, more likely, you know, what have happened. And these are people that migrated relatively early after the flood and after, obviously, after the Babylonian, the Tower of Babel and the confusion of languages. And this is evidence of this migration up into this area.
Mm-hmm. Well, still, it's so hard to reverse this notion that they were primitives and they were brutes. And I think it's genetic research, genetic technology, the abilities to analyze and detect changes in DNA. Now, part of the article, one of the articles here says the full sequencing of Neanderthal DNA showed it was at least 99.7% just like that of living humans. And one of the conclusions was that modern humans are no brainier than Neanderthals, a study finds. We talk about physical appearances, but what about mental abilities? How is it that we think somehow they were less intelligent than we are now?
Well, again, it's the evolutionary story, but it's just a story. I mean, in fact, you know, as we've talked about many times, you know, the ancient people were much brighter than we are. Yeah, I mean, we go through life, and as the more generations of humans we have, the dumber we're getting. It's not the brighter we're getting, the dumber we're getting. I mean, you know, can you imagine if we found out that the Neanderthals were, you know, had thought capacity over and above Einstein and over and above some great scientist that we attribute some fantastic intellect to? I mean, the geniuses that we have today, you know, are just a small, you know, percentage of our population. But what if your whole population was like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if your whole population could figure out things, and they could, you know, build different things? And I think the more we look into ancient societies, the more we see that, hey, they had some fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the Egyptian with the battery and with the cataract surgery and various things, you know, they had quite ability, mental abilities that perhaps we've lost over the ages.
That is an intriguing notion. That is, and it gives you a whole different view of those that came before. First of all, they were survivors. They invented things. They discovered things that you wonder if we could. Like if there had never been a wheel, the first to come up with a wheel and make it a functional tool. I mean that's a mental process. I'm not sure many of us, we can't work a cell phone. How are we supposed to invent a wheel? You know, it gives you a very refreshing perspective on our origins when you look back and think, hey, they were brighter than we were, and every successive generation is getting dumber in some way. And these are DNA mutations, aren't they, that cause that?
Well, it's the mutations. It's actually, you know, even our mental capacities, and the Lord created us with tremendous, you know, with tremendous capacity. But activities that we do, especially younger in life, will help determine how much reasoning ability we have later in life. So if you're thrust in an environment where when you're younger, you have to survive. In order to survive, you got to come up with means and ways of capturing your food or farming or things like that, or making clothes. Then, you know, as you get older, of course, you've got these skills. You've got this tremendous skill set. Take the kids for the day. What skill set do they have? I mean, do they?
That's a good
because
question.
They're in an environment that is almost, you know, quite protective. They're not thrust out into the road and say, "Hey, find your own way home. Good luck."
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're protected, and so when they get older, 20, 30, even 40 years old, they don't have this collection of skills that would help them to survive if for all of a sudden the electricity was turned off. Oh my goodness, you know, how am I going to cook my meals?
I remember when several years ago our neighbor girl came over. She was about maybe 10 years old at the time, and she had to do some math homework. And she said, "Can I borrow your calculator? We have a little handheld calculator." And hers was broken, it seems. And I said, well, sure, but do you use a calculator? Is that how you answer your math problems? She said, "Well, yes." And I said, "Well, how would you fare? How would you do that if there were no calculators? What if we forgot how to make calculators?" And she just got this horrified stare on in her eyes. Said, oh no, that can't happen. That could never happen. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, and what, probably when you were going to college and when I was going to college, I mean, we could not use calculators.
Well, there
calculators
weren't. There weren't any. There were. There was the abacus. There were slide rules. I remember slide rules.
Slide rules.
Yeah.
I used, you know, with my my chemistry and physical chemistry, you know, homework and everything, we had to use slide rules. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you had to learn how the slide rule worked. I mean, what's the basis of a slide rule? Mm-hmm. You know, you ask a kid that today, he will not or she will not know.
Interesting article. And again, let me put the link to this article back in the chat window, because I think listeners will find this of particular interest. And it's not that long, and it's not real scientific. There's some science there, but there's now a link in the bottom of the chat window. You can go and take a look at that article at the Institute for Creation Research. We're talking with Don Clark, as we're always pleased to do on Tuesday mornings. Don, a biochemist and a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to recommend to you that you visit the Creation Moments website. It's creationmoments.com. creationmoments.com, and there are vast resources there, articles and DVDs and the radio program, which you hear on the air here and around the world, really, every day. They're on something close to 1,000 radio stations all over the world, Creation Moments. You learn a lot about the scientific evidence that supports the biblical creation story, and there's plenty of it. It's just that it's tough to find it sometimes. Institute of Creation Research is one of the places you can go. CreationMoments.com is another place you can go to buttress your arguments, to broaden your understanding of the biblical story of creation. So we recommend it highly here, CreationMoments.com. And Don, as always, we're grateful to you. Thank you for sharing with us. And we learned something today. That's always a good way to start a week and start a new year. We wish you a happy new year, you and yours. And hope the winery does well. Yeah. So we will see you next week, I hope.
Okay, very good.
Hate to lose you again.
Y'all take care.
Okay, bye-bye.